Welcome to Deep End of Public Education. My name is Kristen Grubbs, and I'm grateful for each and every one of you who choose to listen and to consider my perspective. In my last two episodes, I shared how Missouri law defines materials that are pornographic for minors. I shared what science has proven to be pornography's effect on the adolescent brain, and my thoughts on the dichotomy that a district cannot preach dignity while furnishing pornographic materials to minors. In this episode, I'll share what happened in my local school district when the pornography issue was breached at a recent school board meeting. I'll also discuss how the same issue was addressed in a federal court and how it relates to freedom of speech. There's a lot to explore here, so let's get to swimming in the deep end of public education. On January 19th, a community member spoke during public comment during our monthly school board meeting. He first asked if the parents with kids in the room could step out. He introduced himself as a leader of the largest conservative community group in Missouri that meets regularly. He told the board how the district is supposed to teach and protect our students, but that it's failing to do so. Then, after a brief apology to the audience for breaching the topic, he began to read from a book that was reviewed by committee, retained, appealed, and the school board itself voted unanimously to retain in December of 2021. He began reading. He reached his hand down and pulled. His mic was cut. The online feed to our district's YouTube channel returned to the district's logo screen and piano music. Thankfully, an audience member in the room began recording, so the whole incident was caught on video. The board president had interrupted him, and an exchange between the two of them ensued. The speaker questioned why he wasn't allowed to read it in a public setting full of adults, but children in our high school libraries are allowed to read it. Audience members shouted. The board president responded to the speaker, saying, "This isn't a discourse. Our board policy prohibits speakers at the public comment portion of our meeting from using profanity." She continued reading from a prepared response about how children in the library, quote, have the choice to read it if it is in one of our libraries or if it is part of their curriculum. They are guided in their reading of it, including the proper context or otherwise, end quote. Her continued reading became difficult to hear as the audience urged the speaker to continue reading the excerpt. The speaker continued to read the excerpt. The board president had the police officers on duty at the time come closer to the podium, asking them to have him removed as she banged the gavel. An officer approached the speaker, one lingered closer to the door. The audience continued to shout about the book being made available to 14-year-olds, one man saying, "If my daughter can read it, then why can't we read it here in public?" The speaker peacefully left the room with the officers, and the meeting continued. There are three major concerns with what occurred in that meeting. One, the content of the book he was reading from was deemed unacceptable for public meeting. Two, his First Amendment right to free speech was stifled. And three, his 14th Amendment rights were violated. First, the book the reader is speaking out of is called All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson. I shared about this book in my last two episodes. The scene excerpted at the meeting was actually rather mild compared to other scenes in the book, yet it was deemed unacceptable for a public meeting. Yes, if the excerpt were to be read on the school district's YouTube channel, it'd probably get flagged, censored, or even removed for being inappropriate for what's supposed to be a family-friendly channel. Ironic, isn't it, that YouTube may deem it inappropriate for children as well? Yet it's available in all three of my district's high schools where students as young as 14 can check it out. How is that acceptable? That leads me to the other major concern regarding our First Amendment rights. If your recollection of the First Amendment is rusty, or maybe you've never actually read it before, here's how it reads. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The 14th Amendment goes hand in hand with the First Amendment. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment reads, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. The legal definition on thefreedictionary.com defines due process of law as a fundamental constitutional guarantee that all legal proceedings will be fair and that one will be given notice of the proceedings and an opportunity to be heard before the government acts to take away one's life, liberty, or property. Also, a constitutional guarantee that a law shall not be unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. Our Constitution guarantees us the right to redress of grievances by our governing bodies. It guarantees us the right to speak freely, especially when addressing grievances before elected officials. It even protects us from vague and unreasonable laws that hinder due process. I typically only share concerning issues as I find them to occur in my local district, but it's important to see how others in history have dealt with such issues so we can respect precedent moving forward. With that in mind, let's swim a little deeper into the broader pool of public education as I share with you how this topic was breached on a federal level in a school district in another state. Mama Bears versus Forsyth County Schools is a case that came about in mid-2022. When a group of moms, speaking out at Forsyth County School Board meetings, had their rights violated when they were censored when addressing the board about inappropriate books found in school libraries. During public comment time at the February board meeting 2022, one of the mama bears, Allison Hare, read from a book that contained pornographic content, and the board chairman stopped her short, saying she either followed the rules read before the public comment time, or she stops. The rules that he was speaking of were from the public participation policy for the school district, which reads in part that the board may limit the time allocated for public participation as well as length of individual comments at their discretion. No individual or group will be retaliated against in any manner whatsoever for speaking during public participation. Speakers are asked to keep their remarks civil. Profane, rude, defamatory remarks, and personal attacks will not be allowed. By reading and acknowledging acceptance prior to speaking during public participation, speakers attest that they understand and will abide by this policy. Failure to abide by this policy may result in forfeiture of the right to participate in future board meetings. The chairman of the board is responsible for enforcing this policy, and speakers who are found in violation will have their allotted speaking time immediately concluded. Strangely, before public comment at the February school board meeting in Forsyth County, the board chairman strayed from the policy and said, "We want to remind our citizens that public participation is to present issues or concerns to the board, but in doing so, we do not allow profane comments or comments which involve inappropriate public subjects. If your comments include anything that you might read tonight as inappropriate to being stated in public, you will be instructed to stop." At that meeting, after Ms. Hare was stopped mid-speech, other mama bears who spoke decided to self-censor their reading of inappropriate library books by using abbreviations, acronyms, or even poignant pauses instead of words that the chairman may deem profane. The same thing happened at the school board meeting in March that year. Allison Hare attempted to read from a book with pornographic content that was available in school libraries in Forsyth County Schools, and she was stopped. Although the excerpt she chose lacked profanity, the language of the book created quite a vivid picture of a sexual encounter. Her free speech had been suppressed. You might be asking why she must read straight from the books that she believes are inappropriate for minors to access in the schools. The core purpose of the Mama Bears group is to remove pornographic content from school libraries in the district. Mama Bears members believe that for the board and the public at large to understand the problem of pornographic books in their children's academic settings, they must expose these readings in a way that cannot be ignored by the board or the public. Following the March board meeting, Ms. Hare received a letter from the chairman stating that she is banned from attending school board meetings unless or until she submits a written guarantee that she would pledge fealty to the public participation rules and to the chairman's directives. Ms. Hare refrained from attending another board meeting and received another letter in May of that year, signed by all the Forsyth County School Board members, reiterating the first letter's stance that she was uncivil and can only return to meetings if she commits in writing to following the rules. A mama bear, Cindy Martin, who chose to self-censor during her comment time, shared her experience. The lawsuit explained, "The board's censorial behavior, including its banishment of Ms. Hare, has caused Ms. Martin to refrain from speaking at board meetings altogether. The board's censorship would force Ms. Martin to use less effective speech and to forego some aspects of her message entirely for fear of being chastised, arrested, physically removed from the board meetings, and banished from attending further meetings. Ms. Martin cannot deliver the full impact of her message if she cannot use the actual words that appear in the books being discussed. The words are jarring and explicit, and for the board and the public to understand the full impact these words have on the reader, she must be able to say them as they are written and mean to be read. Ms. Martin believes that the actual unsanitized words are essential to promoting her viewpoints about the books." The Mama Bear versus Forsyth County Schools lawsuit declares the district's public participation policy violates the First and 14th Amendments in that it suppresses petitions for redress and makes it harder for citizens to criticize government officials and ask for changes in policy. It claims the prohibitions on speech that is uncivil, profane, rude, defamatory, or personal attacks, as mentioned in the public participation policy, are each unduly vague, serving only to authorize the board members' arbitrary censorship of speech they dislike, and that these vague terms invite self-censorship by speakers so they can avoid being interrupted or cut off. This lawsuit claims that by requiring the mama bears to read and acknowledge acceptance of the policy's terms as a condition of speaking at its meetings, the board places a prior restraint on speech. This prior restraint is unconstitutional because the prohibitions of uncivil, profane, rude, and defamatory speech and of personal attacks grant the school board unbridled discretion to determine which speech may be expressed and which may not. This is a complicated subject. Thankfully, we've got some excellent constitutional case law in our country that sets precedent for situations like this. Barrett versus Walker City School District in 2017 declared, "Although a limited public forum might rightly limit speech at the forum to only certain content, the First Amendment does not tolerate viewpoint-based discrimination against speech within the scope of the forum's subject matter. Viewpoint discrimination is when specific motivating ideology or the opinion or perspective of the speaker is the rationale for the restriction." In other words, the Forsyth County School's chairman didn't like the Mama Bear's speech, so he deemed it inappropriate. In another 2017 case, Maddow versus Tam, it was determined that the public expression of ideas may not be prohibited merely because the ideas are themselves offensive to some of their hearers. In an historical case out of the Supreme Court of Alabama in 1964, New York Times Company versus Sullivan, when deciding the case in favor of the protected First Amendment right to free speech, the judgment put forth considered a profound national commitment to the principle that debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open, and that it may well include vehement, caustic, and sometimes unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials. Terminiello versus Chicago in 1949 stated very clearly, "The vitality of civil and political institutions in our society depends on free discussion. It is only through free debate and free exchange of ideas that government remains responsive to the will of the people and peaceful change is effected. The right to speak freely and to promote diversity of ideas and programs is therefore one of the chief distinctions that sets us apart from totalitarian regimes." The 2019 case, DeMartini versus Town of Gulfstream, states, "The right to petition the government for a redress of grievances is one of the most precious of the liberties safeguarded by the Bill of Rights and is high in the hierarchy of First Amendment values. The right to petition the government for redress of grievances is such a fundamental right as to be implied by the very idea of government, republican form. Our First Amendment guarantees our right to speak freely, without censorship, and our right to petition our government for redress of grievances. The 14th Amendment guarantees our right to due process, meaning no unreasonable or arbitrary laws can be made that will take our liberty away without first due process, offering those affected to be heard before the governing body. This is not what happened in Forsyth County School District. The school board put into place a vague rule in the public participation policy that prohibited speech that is uncivil, profane, rude, defamatory, or personal attacks, without those terms being defined. The prohibitions in Forsyth County School's public participation policy prevent speakers from mentioning individuals, including school officials and employees. This violates the Mama Bear's First Amendment rights because the prohibitions are not reasonable in light of the public comment period's purpose. Petitioning a school board for a redress of grievances will necessarily require referencing individuals, especially members of the board. So how does all this relate to what happened in my school district? Unlike the speakers in Forsyth County, Georgia, the speaker that read excerpt at my local school board meeting had his mic shut off before a profane word was even spoken. He was preemptively censored. The sound technician was queued up and ready to cut the sound and the video as directed. The board president had a prepared statement to read, which was not from our district's public participation policy. My district's policy on public participation in board meetings states, speakers will be advised that their speaking time will be limited as directed by the board president. Speakers will be advised that comments must be limited to items which directly pertain to the district. The board president will have the authority to discontinue any presentation which violates any of the participation guidelines. Profane language or comments that constitute a threat to the safety of others is prohibited. Discussion about individual faculty, staff, or students will not be allowed during the open session. Comments may be directed to the superintendent privately, and if necessary, have those issues discussed during a subsequent executive session. Nowhere in our policy does it state restrictions on what is appropriate or profane. Yet a statement of that nature was read by our board president when the speaker was cut off. Where did that statement come from? Why was it being used to stifle a citizen's free speech? Is that legal? Considering the history of constitutional law in our country through the cases I shared today, we see how the First and 14th Amendment rights of the speaker in my district were violated when he was prevented from petitioning the board to redress his grievance. He was interrupted, mic cut, told to stop, and removed from the meeting. Each of us not only have the right as American citizens to call out our publicly elected officials and hold them responsible for wrongdoings, but we have the right to use whatever words we want, even if the words are not likable. By censoring a citizen during his allotted public comment time, my local school board violated his freedom of speech. He had not even said a profane word yet, but even if he had, they have no right to stop him from speaking. They do not get to decide what speech is appropriate in a public meeting where people are allowed to air their grievances to elected officials. Now, if you've listened to my previous episodes on pornography in school libraries, you'll probably wonder how this concept of deciding what is appropriate can be applied one way to public comment in a school board meeting, but applied in a different way when considering what is appropriate content in school libraries. If this crossed your mind, nice catch. I appreciate your critical thinking. Here's how they differ. An adult addressing grievances before elected officials has the right to speak freely about the issue at hand so as to make clear to the elected officials what wrongdoing needs addressed. Children looking for a book or other material in a publicly funded school library are oftentimes protected by state laws that restrict their access to pornographic content. When adults choose to furnish such pornographic materials to minors in school libraries, they are violating the law, at least in Missouri. This is the difference. One demonstrates the right to free speech when seeking redress of grievances, a right protected by our First and 14th Amendments. The other demonstrates a restriction of access in accordance with state law, not stifling of free speech. The library books in question are not being burned. The author's freedom of speech to write them is still protected. They are simply restricted from being furnished to children, especially through publicly funded schools. The books are still allowed to be written, printed, and sold. Free speech is not being stifled. As for who determines what is considered pornographic, that is determined by the wording of state law, as I've discussed in my last two episodes. As for the Mama Bear versus Forsyth County case, it was settled in late February this year, awarding each of the listed mama bears nominal damages in the amount of $17.91, and their legal fees, which rounded $107,500. Their constitutional rights were violated, and Forsyth County schools paid the price. How can we learn from these historical cases and move forward with the goal of exercising and protecting our own free speech and the free speech of others? We keep speaking up when our rights are being violated, when our laws are being broken, and we hold our elected officials accountable. Thank you all for diving with me into the deep end of public education. We cannot allow our school districts to shut us down when we bring our grievances to them. We cannot let them mute our voice. We parents are our children's best advocates. It's our responsibility to speak up for our children. We must be bold and speak truth. If you'd like to learn more about what I've found to be going on in public education, you can find more information at the Deep End of Public Education on Facebook, or go to the link in the description to order my book called Deep End of Public Education. It has been quite an exhausting swim. I hope you'll like and share this episode so those around you can be more informed and more prepared. Oh, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes in the deep end of public education. Thanks for listening.